The Miramax Films logo. I'm Kevin Smith, director, writer, director of Clerks, but before we jump into this, I'm going to let Walter talk about the animation. Walt?
The animation got started because I drew a picture and sent it to Kevin out in Canada. He liked it and said he wanted it to have it be the opening of the logo. I knew nothing about animation. I still really don't. I just drew a lot of pictures of clowns and a kid throwing a ball, and we took him to New York to a guy who did know, and that's what he came up with.
Well, it's being modest. And actually, to tell you the truth, when the movie was released, some guy wrote a letter into the Daily News complaining, called that a child molesting clown. And in reality, he wasn't. He never really touches that boy. His ass kind of hangs in front of the boy's face. But that's about it. He never really molests the boy. So once again, I'm Kevin Smith, writer, director of Clerks. And we got a room full of people here, people involved with Clerks, some people not involved with Clerks. We'll see if we have any surprise mystery guests. Somehow, I don't think so. We're in Minnesota on the set of Mallrats right now, but it's one of our only days down. So we're going to watch Clerks and do some commentary for you. But let's go around the room. You know me, I'm going to introduce you to producer, editor, sound man, all-around good guy, Scott Mosier.
Hi, very nice to be here.
Scott also pops up in the film later on twice, we'll point that out. Sitting to my right, star of Clerks, Dante himself, Brian O'Halloran.
Glad you can join us for a great film.
Almost passed out at my feet. Very drunk, as per usual, is Clerk's co-star and Mallrats co-star, ironically enough, Jason Mewes, playing the role of Jay.
I love Jake, so I'm here, I'm partying up.
Oh, Lord. To below me on the floor, not beneath me, but below me, as already introduced to you, is... Our Lon Chaney of Clerks, the man who plays four roles, plus did the opening animation, Walt Flanagan.
Very nice to be here.
Man of very few words. And sitting to my furthest right, Vincent Pereira, the official Clerks historian, who was there for the origin and is even out here now in Minnesota as we work on Mallrats. And Vinny actually shows up, what, twice in the film?
Yeah.
Twice in the film, and owns the cat. Ken Lennon's tomb. Hold on, here's Ben.
What's up?
And representing the media tonight, Malcolm Ingram from Film Threat.
I'm Canada.
Hi, Mom. It's the good load.
Okay, so the first thing you're seeing here is once we get out of the house, I just want to go back real quickly and talk about that dog's ass that you saw. What he was supposed to be doing was drinking out of the toilet, but I don't know if that came across very well. Somebody once blasted me in a review saying that I resorted to such cheap jokes as showing a close-up of a dog's ass. So just to clarify that, that's not true. Here we are in the store now. You'll notice that the shutters are closed. In a few seconds, Dante's going to go out and, well, after he picks up the papers here, he's going to try to open those shutters. But he can't because we shot most of the movie at night except for this outside stuff like you're seeing right now. So, I wrote into the screenplay that the shutters could not be opened, and that it just made it much easier for us because we certainly couldn't afford to rent. What do they call those lights? HMIs?
HMIs,
you know, we could have flooded the outside into the store with light, but it wouldn't have worked. We didn't have that much cash. So in this movie, the shutters are closed. See, here he comes now, sliding out the garbage can. If you hear this overproduced sound mix because of the last minute, Miramax wanted to open up the sound a bit. You'll see there's gum on those locks. You can't really see. That's why. And it's later explained that there is gum on the locks. But anyway, you're hearing all these little noises and stuff. They were only added mere days before the film was theatrically released. On the festival circuit, we never really had all those sounds.
What, that killer song?
But that killer song by Love Among Freaks has been in this film since it's the first print of it. I think they always called it simply Clerks. The first time they recorded it was on a 4-track cassette recorder in, I believe, Scott Angley's house. Scott Angley, a friend of mine from high school who wrote the music. But later on they got to reproduce it in the studio. So this is the version you're hearing now. It's pretty sweet. A little funkier, too. And we're going to move into the first of many long vocabulary words that pop up as chapter headings in the film. We'll talk about them later on. First scene here, we got Brian O'Halloran, and Scott Schiaffo. A couple of good actors we found at First Avenue Playhouse in Atlanta Commons. Here comes DP Dave Klein, wearing that hat that we all thought was so funny that night. Retrospect didn't really make sense. Ben's got a comment now.
Just thought I'd point out that I was camera operator on this scene since Dave was acting.
Glory Hound Vin Pereira grabbing the mic to point out one of his many attributes. Okay, the lung that they just threw up on the counter wasn't really a lung at all, but it was a liver? Or calf?
Brain. I think it was a stomach one.
Yeah, it was a haggis or something like that.
Tripe,
that's it. And we bought it at the food store, and it came in this kind of net baggy thing. So we just kind of shaped it into what we thought a lung might look like. Took it outside, rubbed it around in the dirt, put out some cigarette butts in it. And there it is. That's the lung. Never got a close-up of that lung, though. Should have got it, because, of course, it didn't look that good. But, you know, it would have conveyed the impression of a dirty lung. I actually wrote this scene back when I was not a smoker, when I was a staunch advocate of non-smoking. And during production of the film, I actually slowly became a smoker, and now I'm up to 19 packs a day. No, 2 packs a day. Nah, maybe one and a half packs a day. Brian, you got something to say?
Yeah, that lung that we made reeks like hell, and I stick my face nearly back down into it as I read my magazine again. That's when I got a lung full of that lung.
That's a good actor for you, because you can't even tell. Although you can see your nostrils kind of flaring. Now, here comes the first of what are 4 appearances, used to be 5, of master animator Walt Flanagan. There he is. Walt became our Lon Chaney because anytime we had a role that we didn't fill, put a hat on him and a wig, and there he was.
I love Walt.
And then there he is himself, the little Funkmeister, our little sonic boom with dirt on it, Jay, standing next to yours truly.
What's that tune in the background?
Tune in the background is Kill the Sex Player by...
Girls Against Boys.
What was the haircut inspiration?
Who, Jay's?
Yeah.
It's just tied back, actually. Didn't you have it shaved on the sides?
Yeah.
And it's tied back, and you'll see the hat comes off later on, the shirt comes off. And,
love that shirt.
Gotta love that shirt, Doonesbury shirt. Now you'll see in the mirror there, see it in the window? There's Vinny just pulled by on a bike. And it was actually serendipitous he did it. I mean, it wasn't slated to happen. It was in the script that we were supposed to be pointing and talking to somebody. Then he just happened to arrive at the store while we were filming the scene. It actually kind of worked. Look at me. I don't even look like a real smoker if you watch real closely. Look at that. That ain't a real smoker. I was barely inhaling. Scott Mosier, producer.
You love women.
Tail end of that scene was cut. It actually went on where Jay listed, gave a laundry list of the stuff that he sells, but it was just kind of gratuitous, so we didn't go with it. And Jay was drunk anyway. Much like he is now, right there, Spanky.
Snoochie Boochie, though, I'm drunk.
Are you a mean drunk or a nice drunk?
A nice drunk.
Yeah. So we swing around the crowd. This used to be one long scene, about 3 minutes long, one take, but it went on and on, so we just kind of cut it, and we threw in this coverage of us outside
smoking
to bridge the gap. Smoking
a cigar. I love moves.
Listen to Walt. See, just like the fucking Nazis, Walt was closest to the mic. As was a friend of ours, Ed Hapstack, who we'll see later on in the flick. And because of that, they get some of the best one-liners off, which we'll all point out to you as they pop up.
Scott Schiaffo with a great performance.
Scott Schiaffo in a tour de force performance. Now here comes Ed's, listen next to the mic. Smoke my big fat cock. This is the guy who's closest to the mic. He gets off on the most vulgar kind of one-liners in the whole film. And then Walter's You Can Smell It, which we just missed. Which should have been the tagline for this film, Clerks, You Can Smell It. If fire extinguisher we use, the first time you see it blast in there, that is a real fire extinguisher. But this stuff here, that's just baby powder that we just kept squirting in the air. And everybody was kind of surprised when that thing happened, because when it blew, everyone turned around and got a mouthful, Walt.
Oh, tasted real bad.
Mouthful of fire extinguisher stuff.
It's sulfur or something like that.
Yeah.
It was very fun to spray it, though.
Yeah, Vinny actually stood on the freezer and sprayed it. Not only did Vinny shoot that first scene because Dave was in it and couldn't operate, Vinny also shot the fire extinguisher.
Also noticed that we lose two of our smoker crowd
here. Yeah, there's a crowd of five there, or six, and now only two leave. Because we filmed the scene, of course, in two parts, and the second time nobody would come back. That was Walt again. This is a scene that wasn't really in the script. We made it up kind of that night.
Something very rare on a Kevin Smith project.
Yeah. In my head, I'm wearing a beard.
Yeah,
that was
Walter's,
my beard.
Walter's actually wearing a beard, one of Brian's theatrical beards.
Yeah.
So we use that to create gray hair, which actually comes across. Walt looks kind of old in that scene.
That's right.
This scene here, actually in the first cut of the film that played at the IFFM and even at Sundance, Marilyn Gigliotti playing Veronica walked into the shot and sat down with him, but it just went on, so we kind of cut the beginning and bridged it with that rolling the cigarette in the fingers close-up.
Also cut quite a bit from the end as well.
Yeah, the scene actually went on longer than where it is. It stops in about two lines, but it did go on and on. It's pretty nice. Between Sundance and the theatrical cut, we took out about 13 minutes. Brought it down to 90, because comedy should really be between 90 and 100 minutes. So, see, we're here on the long shot, and we're going to pop in on it to a closer two. Do a nice little jump cut here. It wasn't that nice. It was actually kind of herky-jerky, but... This whole now painting thing is the first... bit of business I really incorporated or used as a director in rehearsals. Do you remember that, Bri? I mean, we went over the story once already, but...
Yeah.
It was, the scene kind of just wasn't... It was just laying there. I mean, it was the dialogue was fine, so the performances were great, but just needed something to make it a little naturalistic, so they weren't looking at each other.
Someone said nail polish.
Yeah.
We were lucky that Marilyn had some nail polish in her purse. I knew how to paint a nail. So, not like I've painted any on myself, might I?
No, Brian never paints his own nails. So, and there it was. Suddenly he was painting nails behind the counter, which got cited in a lot of reviews. People liked that.
Yeah, nice touch of...
realism?
Yeah. Couplehood.
Close up here we punch in for... Watch the camera moves very slightly to the left. We wouldn't have used it, but we needed that. It was the only close up of the nails we had. This dialogue, I remember the first time I actually heard it in the theater, I was cringing. Because we watched it at the IFFM in New York, the Independent Feature Film Market. There's a crowd of about how many people?
15 at best.
Yeah, at best. And most of them were with the film.
That was like October of 93.
Yeah, October 93. October 3rd, 93, actually.
Yep.
And well, I'm listening to this dialogue for the first time, watching on a big screen at the Angelica Film Center. And I just cringed. It just sounded so... gross.
And it wasn't because of the delivery, might I add.
No, it wasn't the performances. It was just the writing. I was just like, what was I thinking? Get my mind out of the gutter. But
not to mention the fact that we lost about four people in the audience at this point.
Sure. Well, yeah, it wasn't even a festival screening. It was a marketplace screening. So buyers come and go. It makes you feel very terrible. At that point, I swore I'd never write filthy dialogue again. I've quickly rescinded on that because the box is in filthy dialogue.
Notice how well framed it looks for a film that was shot in 16 and blown up to 1.85. Most 16 films look rather...
I've noticed that most 16 films look rather tightly cropped top and bottom, but Dave really framed this really well, and it just blew up beautifully. And in fact, the 1.85 print probably looks better than the full frame edition.
Here we go, second appearance of producer Scott Mosier. Scott, why don't you enlighten us as to the differences between scripted Willem and and played and performed Willem. But actually, let's hold on 1 second, because I want to point out to the careful viewer the appearance of Walt Flanagan. At the very, and the next take we come back to Willem, look in the very, the severe, what is that, would that be their left or my right? Left hand court. Yeah, you just missed it. Walter kind of, yeah, Walter was the clap boy that day, and he actually snapped the slate and was running out of the frame, and we started shooting. So this was a really hard scene to shoot because Scott was laughing the whole time.
Yeah, well, I was laughing.
But hold on, tell him about Scripted Willem.
The Scripted Willem was more of a college guy, and we actually had a guy, Ed Hapsack's brother, was going to play it, but he didn't want to play it because he didn't want to be known as the guy who ate his own cum. And I had no problem with being the guy that ate his own cum. So, and I didn't exactly look like a college guy, so he sort of turned into a bit of a drug addict, maybe innocent, idiot man-child that he is in the film.
Where'd you come up with the term?
Snowballing.
Snowballing, we'll jump in, we'll grab in a second. I just want to point out that this is probably the scene that, if anything, gave us the NC-17, was the whole 37... You suck 37 dicks conversation. We got an NC-17 originally by the MPAA, and then they reversed it and gave us an R without a single cut, which is really rare, but thank God they did it. But the term snowballing came from a friend of ours, a friend of a friend, actually, who described snowballing as you know, getting head and receiving your load shot back in your mouth by whoever gives that head.
Should anybody just practice this?
Snowballing? You know. Ardently or just casually? You'll notice Jane Kurtz here, who plays the customer, is bringing up rubber gloves and Vaseline. You have to look real closely to see that. It's one of the cheapest jokes in the film, but we thought it was funny that night. And then her boyfriend, who comes up right after, Mike Bellica, a friend of mine from the old days, brings up diapers, which wasn't very funny, but it was actually a product placement. Because are they Huggies?
Yes.
There they are. Nobody paid us for that product placement. See those shades behind Brian's head? We actually used those outside the door right there to filter the light. We didn't have any gels or anything, so two people are outside there holding that up. There's kind of tape there, it kept slipping. It was one of the very, yes, yeah, so you could see it shake in the background. Oh my God, listen to this. Listen to this, you can hear Jason Mewes snoring on the floor. Again, bemused by the wonder of Clerks. Yeah, but you're right outside the door, too. I mean, you can't see them. Thank God they still have camera. Vinny and Mrs. Topper, a woman who owns the store, keeping customers away. See, Marilyn didn't really open the door. We cut right there, and then we just... You know, the
training for PA.
That guy right there, Mitch Cohen. Boyfriend of Leslie Hope, our makeup girl. One of the simplest intertitles in the film, Randall. Stan Baranowski, who wouldn't go by his real name. He went by the name Lee Bendick, which was his wife's maiden name.
Give you an explanation why he wouldn't go by his real name?
Probably the shame of being involved in a film that had this many
cuss words
in it.
How'd you find him?
He was a customer of the store. Stan was actually a customer, came in all the time. I thought he gave a great performance.
It should also be pointed out that
the last scene had one of the only problems with the lab, the scene with Willem Black. That whole roll came back with a burn right through it when you first shot it, and the whole thing had to be reshot.
Later in the shoot, which is why you'll notice through the film, Brian's beard gets thicker and thinner. You'll find the stuff that we shot first, because his beard, his whole goatee kind of thing is thin. His Van Dyke, if you will. And watch this pretty bad burn cut of the keys going in the garbage. Yeah, it's the worst. Look at it. See that burn? Not a style choice.
Yeah, getting back to the beard, Kevin had asked me to shave. I had had that goatee to begin with. Had asked me to shave it off. 3 days before shooting. So I'd shaved it off and coming in for one of the rehearsals, and he looked and went, "Whoa, that's not what I wanted." So they asked me to grow it back, and I have quick, you know, hair follicles, I guess, and I grew it right back.
Who's this girl?
Betsy Broussard. But let's talk about the first appearance of Randall in the film. This is where the film suddenly becomes a buddy movie. Randall, portrayed by Jeff Anderson, who's not here. And that's all I'll say about that. Yeah, Jeff was a friend of mine from high school who he started coming to the video store a lot. And I told him about the movie, and I said, why don't you pop in for auditions? So he popped in, and he actually auditioned for the role of Jay. Yeah, there you hear Alice in Chains in the background. Thanks to Sony, the kind people at Sony. Yeah, you can pick up that Clerks soundtrack, still on sale. So anyway, he was a friend of mine, and he came in for the auditions. Auditioned as Jay. I was going to play the role of Randall myself. I had written it to play myself. That's why Randall has all the best lines. But, sorry, Bri. But, we got close to production, just couldn't do it. That No Time for Love, Dr. Jones, that comes from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. But, so anyway, once I realized that, you know, I'm not going to be able to play this part and direct and work in the store, I started looking for a Randall, and none of the real actors we had seen kind of fit the role, but Jeff, who'd never acted before, seemed like he kind of fit it. So I sat down, read the whole script with him. Bingo, bango, he got it. You notice the back and forth between Jeff and Brian is just incredible. Look at that. See, that was a Hostess Pie sign. And if you look real closely, it says Dave's Pies. Scott drew the Dave, little Dave figure. Give him a thumbs up. Dave, our DP. A salute to Dave. I think this is where the dialogue in the film probably is at its most stylized and fastest. Just goes back and forth, like a kind of like a David Mamet scene out of a David Mamet play.
What was the Daily News quote?
David Mamet meets Howard Stern. More business. And actually, some people asked if Jeff was reading his lines, but he's not. He's actually just reading Courier, the local paper. But I remember on that clapboard. Right, Brian?
Yeah, there were some keywords on that clapboard.
We had to throw a few keywords in there, especially for that little speech that Brian has coming up. He has one very long mouthful. But it's a great bit of business. Like, you got the clapboard, you got the receipts, you got the calculator.
Yeah, it
just looks real busy. Now he's going to make a crack about they moved to Idaho together. Once again, a little nod to Dave, the DP.
Who is from Idaho.
Who's from Idaho himself. Never raised sheep and is not gay.
What about if you planned to shoplift, let us know? Where would that come from?
Just sound like a funny idea.
And it also turns up in the music video.
Great song. And here comes that big mouthful. Let's talk about the Bri's got to spit out.
No, I'm listening. She's leaving college and she's looking for me for support. And I think this is leading our relationship to a new level. And what about Veronica?
Here it comes.
I think the arguments Veronica and I have, and are some kind of manifestation of a subconscious desire to break up with her so I can pursue a more meaningful relationship with Kate.
And look at that. It doesn't look like he's reading at all. That's because Bri's a pro.
It's a long take. Very long take.
Very long take. You'll notice no cuts here, man. Back and forth.
Where'd you book the name Caitlin?
Caitlin came from a nod to Degrassi Junior High, which is a show in Canada. You should know that, Malcolm. Torontonian that you are.
Yeah, we look for.
One of the biggest scenes in the film always gets noticed is the porno list that Randall reels off. And being that the woman here is Vincent's sister-in-law, I think Vincent's got some insight into the scene.
This scene was pretty fun to film. As a matter of fact, the girl is also my niece. But it was amusing to film because I remembered that Randall, Jeff, didn't want to read that list off in front of her. And in fact, his close-up of reading off the porno list was filmed separate from Connie and Ashley in the store. And yet, for reaction shots, when they were filming Connie, she actually had me read the list out loud in front of her and my little niece, who was 3 years old at the time, and she didn't even get it, so...
Best line, best one line, yeah, invented all those titles. Best one line in that whole list is a huge black cocks of pearly white cum.
The one that you left out.
The one I left out I loved was Ass Blasters in Outer Space. But we never made it into the list there.
I like the KY connection.
KY, yeah, Men in 102, the KY connection. Now here we come to another great moment in the film. We refer to this as the first strong 45 minutes of the film. Because it's like bang, bang, bang with the jokes. Once the two boys get together, things starts riding fast. 37 is great too. The whole 37 dick sequence.
This was another long thing that we had cut down.
Yeah, another long take. But here we go. The tricky shot here with the cat. Everyone always asked us at the festival screenings, you know, how'd you get the cat to shit on cue? And the typical response was, well, you know, it's not that difficult. You just got to beat the shit out of him. But he's actually shitting that cat. First time we popped him in the box, he wouldn't do it.
And the gentleman you see there standing in front of him is the owner of the First Avenue Playhouse where they had auditioned for the film.
Yeah, we held audition for Clark's at his playhouse. But that cat did take a dump. And if you listen real close, if you go back on the sound mix, you can hear that shit hitting the dirt. Hitting the cat sand. And then Bri, sniffing. John Henry Westhead as the immortal Olaf, singer of Berserker.
And our makeup person.
And our makeup person, Leslie Hope. And of course, Jay himself. Would you get off the microphone cord, you drunken bastard? Jay is still very past. Jay, your scene's up. Say something.
Love chicks.
Give us a little insight into this, man.
Say something, you bitch.
I love this scene. I love moves.
It's the best we're going to get out of him. Recently in the news, there was a case of some guys. What did they do, those skinheads? And one guy
killed
one of their parents, and the guy had Berserker written on his forehead.
Yeah, someone asked me about that.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious if it had anything to do with it.
Well,
the USA t-shirt he's wearing is a nice, nice touch. If you look at me, I'm really pissed off, too, because Jason couldn't spit this scene out.
And you wrote the lyrics to Berserker?
Yeah, I wrote the lyrics to Berserker once when we were on our way back from the mall. There's a character that Walter kind of created. He stole a wig from JCPenney off a mannequin and started wearing it around backwards. We were telling everyone he was a Russian metalhead. So, hence Olaf was born. Oh, that was believed.
It wasn't the original soundtrack of Empire that you were using.
Yeah, that sound effect that we used for Empire Strikes Back, we kind of built. I mean, now he goes in the store and tells Dante he was watching Empire.
There was a bit cut here, too, that was pretty...
He was watching Return.
Yeah, he's watching Return of the Jedi. There's Scott again. That's beautiful, man. Pringles scene, always a big one. Chuck Bickle, playing a Bill Murray type guy. Kind of sounds like Bill Murray's character from Caddyshack a bit. But on the festival circuit, I can't tell you how many times I heard, that's happened to me so many times. That old Pringle can on the hand thing. There's a nice little touch here. Bri actually eats the potato chips that are left at the bottom.
I just did that subconsciously.
Yeah, it was really nice. Probably had Chuck Bickle sweat all over.
Yeah. There's a little continuity bloop.
Yeah?
Yeah, that can's not there when I return back.
Ooh, good eye. Yeah, the can's suddenly missing when I come back to the counter.
Also, this shot was done with a dolly a couple of times that Ed built. That worked quite well, but it just looked too smooth. And it worked much better with the handheld going.
No Pringle can.
No Pringle can. Big scene, man. Star Wars scene.
Love this song.
Yeah, and the song's by Supernova, a song called Chewbacca, which just repeatedly says, Chewie, what a Wookiee.
Was that written for this?
No, it wasn't. It's just an existing tune we kind of got into a lot. A little too much, I guess.
This is the scene the French poster is made
of. Yeah, the French poster of the film basically has this image on it. There's a local guy. He's from Leonardo. Thomas.
No, are you sure it's this scene that's in the French poster? I thought it was the scene of him working
with the egg one. Yeah, it could be that. But this scene right here, it took us about 16, 17, maybe 20 takes to get, because the guy that plays the roofer kept messing up. And a really great story about that is Jason Mewes was surprisingly drunk the night that we were shooting this, and he was sitting on the floor of the convenience store while we were shooting his coverage when we get to the roofer. And the roofer, we go into our 15th take or something, and Jason just lets out from the floor, "He messed up again?" And the roofer goes, "Can we get this guy out of here?" And so we had to put Jay in the video store. And later on, the roofer guy freaked Jay out by once Jay came in with a joint behind his ear, and the roofer guy was like, "What the hell are you doing?" And Jay's like, "What?" And he's like, "You know what I am, don't you?" And Jay's like, "What?" And the roofer guy turns to me, and he's going, "You know what I am, don't you?" And I didn't know, so I just started distancing myself from Jason because I thought arrest was coming down. But he's going, "I'm a narc, for God's sakes." And Jay starts walking back, and he, like, starts hiding the joint. He's like, "What are you talking about?" And the guy revealed that he wasn't really a narc. Well, that would be played.
Talking about the joint.
Yeah, that better make it on the disc. See, now we notice Jay's shirt is missing. His outfit changes throughout the entire movie. It's kind of a little ode to Animal House here with Jay cramming food in his mouth. And the reason we have actually Jay in there eating food that wasn't scripted was because we couldn't get this in a single take. So we needed some coverage. We needed something to cut to, which actually makes it more cinematic, I guess.
That's usually the only reason you ever cut to the cat or Jay or anything else.
Because we couldn't get it all the way. If you'll notice, he runs to the back of the store, which we never really figure out why. I mean, so basically, I guess he's hiding in the freezer. And the big vocabulary words. We're going to talk about them later, but first we're going to talk about this. Great scene. But you'll notice, see the outside? We didn't have gels, and we didn't have those shades to use from next door, so it looks like a nuclear winter outside. It's bright as hell, but watch Jay real closely in the background. He's going to turn his attention on her. He's looking in, and he starts doing the whole... He's pointing, he's like telling Silent Bob to look in. I take a peek in. Jay starts doing the tongue, see it? And doing the dick sucking face. And smiling, and he pulls out a cig. And I light it for him.
That's Donna Jean from the First Avenue Playhouse, the owner's wife.
How did you direct this? How did you know you had a great take? Because it is a really good take.
I just had to trust Dave on this. I was listening really closely, though. Jay's not saying anything outside. It's kind of funny. You see him, he's boxing me and shit. I wonder if anyone ever saw that in the theater, though.
What, the dick sucking?
Everything in the background.
Yeah, I was watching it, but then again, I've seen it full
time. Yeah, we know to expect it, but the first viewing audience. See him jumping up and down? I said, just jump up and down, because that's kind of his character. He watches her go. Now listen to him in the background. Always a big laugh. If only you could have saw the outside, though, that would have been sweet. And then on the board in the background, there's a picture of Larry Flynn Boyle and the cast of Seinfeld. Those four kind of white dots of the four faces of Seinfeld. And above it, picture of Larry Flynn Boyle holding a sheep. Yeah, this is the French poster right here. Walter, second appearance as the Eggman, the immortal Eggman.
I am the Eggman.
We actually kind of had Leslie, the makeup chick, gray up his temple, so he's got that whole Reed Richards of the Fantastic Four kind of look going. Yet another case of we just could not get an actor to fill the role, so we just changed Walter's appearance, further living up to his title of Lon Chaney in the 90s. See the egg spinning around? Look at that. That's my favorite part, just the light tap to make it roll. This chick here, that's my sister. She's actually pretty good. Now the disappearing egg part. Look at the deflated appearance.
We should thank Ask Isadora from the Village Voice for her job occupation when it comes up.
Yeah, she mentions her job occupation at the end. And basically that came out of the Village Voice. There was an advice column there. Well, why don't you give us a little Eggman talk?
I remember driving in a torrential rainstorm trying to get that jacket and a tie from your house, your mom, because I didn't have anything to wear for that. You wanted somebody to look sort of professional. And it was probably the most fun scene that I, or fun character that I had.
Did you come up with the, what he was doing?
The nipple thing.
Yeah. Oh, no, I came up with the nipple thing, but Kevin wanted me to smash him on the window.
The nipple thing was inspired.
Okay, right now this is one of the hardest. Watch, here comes a big gaffe continuity. See, there's no sign on the register. There's no, if you plan to shoplift, let us know sign. There's a Greenpeace sticker. And in a second, there is going to be a sign when we cut back. See, there's a sign. It's one of our only continuity errors. Special guest just joined us. Say hello to Jim Jacks, producer of Raising Arizona, Dazed and Confused, and now our new movie, Mallrats. Jim?
Hello. What are y'all doing in my room?
Jim, why don't you let us know what you thought about Clerks first time you saw it, Sundance? Oh. Walt again. Not the Eggman character either, but a lot of people thought he was.
Where am I going? Oh, he has a letterbox.
Yeah, it's letterbox.
That's cool. You gonna leave it here?
This tape?
Yeah.
Sure. You'll notice he's buying paper towels and window washing spray, glass cleaner, so basically it fits the monologue.
Let's not forget that this scene was written as a woman.
Yeah, the scene was written for a woman, but the woman wouldn't play it at the last minute. So once again, the Lon Chaney of the 90s steps up to the plate. Where's my glasses? Those are my glasses. Bry's coat, we Waldo'd his hair. Look at that, there's the only nudity in the film. Look at that slight pause when he turns before he runs.
They blew that up when that cleared.
Really? Yeah, on the big screen that came out crystal clear. We're gonna take a peek at these people, and then Jim's gonna give us a few good words, maybe about Clerks. This is one of the first things I ever conceived when I thought about the screenplay. It was kind of like an ode to Spike Lee's She's Gotta Have It, where he does the whole dog sequence where the guys just give those bad one-liners to chicks. I just like the idea of totally separate from the entire film, kind of headshots of these people talking at the camera. And if you'll notice, there's three of them, and then there's another three. They're both talking about disparate groups of people, but they're both the same people. Although this person right here, that's my mom. And if you look really closely, I inherited her thighs. This was one of the last things we shot.
That's your mom?
That's my mother.
Wanted to be cut out of the movie after she
definitely wanted to be cut out. Do you see some of the new releases? You can figure out when we shot it. There's Dave, DP Dave, in his second appearance in the film when he had hair. Now Dave's bald. Here we go. I never got blasted for that. I really thought somebody would say something about that. Ooh, Navy SEALs joke. Never once. Now here they go, and then Brian talks about the same group of people. This was an ad-lib. You can listen to that Mini Truckin' magazine. It's really subtle. Jim, Clerks, thoughts?
Well, it'd be easier if Jason were
drunk in the water.
Yeah. Jason. Yeah. Wake up. We're watching your movie. Says, well, my first reaction was, I wish the director and producer hadn't been sitting right behind me as I was watching it. So I felt like I was being monitored every second since I'd been introduced to them right before the lights went down, and then they plopped right behind me. But no, I was actually very taken with the dialogue and the acting, and for the amount of money it was made for, it was quite an achievement. And it was an honest opinion.
is it? No, I was very, very, very taken with that movie. Yeah, well, I told you one of this. My first reaction was that I thought, gee, let's remake this, and, you know. But as a, you know, as a movie, you know, with in color and all, you know, I mean, really, and just open it up. I mean, a lot of things that are talked about, actually see it, and then talking to you, and we said, well, let's do that in kind of a but with a different group of characters, and that's basically how Mallrats came started off. Hence the new movie.
Yeah,
the second of the trilogy.
That rack, there's like there's a couple magazines that aren't or would never be found in Quick Stop. One was Film Threat, one was The Independent. There's a gaffe if you look closely. The People magazine cover changes twice during the filming. Once it's with Brandon Lee when he died, and the other is with Punky Brewster, Solal Moonfry, when she got her breasts enlarged or shortened. I don't know. But anyway, that was the cover of People magazine when we were shooting the movie. It's a hell of a commentary, isn't it?
Yeah, is anybody talking besides you, Kevin, on this?
Yeah, we've been passing around.
Oh, yeah? I'm not even supposed
to be here. This was another scene that we cut down severely. Jay? We tried to get some words from Jay, but he's still out cold. Yeah, this scene did actually go on much longer. It started and with him dialing and went on, but we cut it.
Actually, it started with my first cameo, which got cut.
Yeah, it started at the counter with Vincent talking to Randall about the cat, and then we panned over to Brian at the phone. But instead, when we were cutting the film down, we just cut right to Brian on the phone. Starts with that ominous chord of music, and then he says, Vermont. This is another bit of dialogue back and forth that I was always really taken with.
Wasn't this the take that Brian got frustrated and ran out of the store in the middle of the night?
Was this roast Brian night? Yeah, this was definitely one of the takes. We could not get this down, and at one point, Bri just in a fit ran outside and just ran up the block, jogged up the block, cleared his head, came back, did the scene. The most time buckle has ever said in any movie.
And you're actually very good in this.
Why, thank you,
Jim.
Which is probably why he's here in Mallrats.
Exactly. Brian turns up again in Mallrats.
As his brother.
Yeah, as the either brother or cousin of Dante Hicks. But you got to pay to see Mallrats.
Okay, for here we have Walt's hands taking up the stick, both sides. Ed, half stack, slapping up the ball. Walt tying his skates again. This is one of my favorite scenes in the film because the dialogue's going real fast. And Ed Hapstack just joined us, fourth man of our four-man crew on Clerks. Ed's going to skate on in here in a second at Sanford. Ed, you got some thoughts on your character or the scene?
First of all, I do play hockey, and I am a New Jersey Devils fan. And it was great to have an opportunity to play hockey on a roof, even though it was barely a game, but we did get to play around. And Kevin did let me improvise my shoe polish melon motherfucker line, which made me a little more comfortable with the part. The other thing about the hockey scene I liked is I got to operate the camera while on rollerblades with David Klein kind of wheeling me around the roof and some low angle shots. And if you notice when you watch the game, I am one of the only ones that score, because I did pretty much rule everybody on the roof.
Yes, I
quite came. There's me picking my ass because we needed some kind of action.
Yeah, you fucking hog.
Jay just woke up from his drunken stupor, so he might be joining us for some commentary. So you'll notice the sound cutting here. It's all loud up there. It's all quiet below. This is what we came to call in sound editing the world above, world below phenomenon. The music's loud when we're on the roof. Below, it's quiet. There's producer Scott Mosier. In his second role, shaved beard. First, you'll remember he was Snowball outside the store. And now you'll see him with no beard.
Just a
quick note, I am a Ranger fan. I'm not a Penguins fan, by the way. I had no choice.
And you'll notice that Randall's the only one that doesn't wear a team jersey. He wears a CCP jersey, 3CP, which puts him out once again as a rebel amongst us. So here's Scott, pops his head into the frame, going to begin this scene. Actually, on the ladder where he almost fell a few times.
Notice my use of the word pal.
Yeah, Scott will say pal twice, I'll show you.
Crazy neck.
Pal number one. Pal number two. Now here's Danny, who would not play Snowball, didn't want to be known as the cum eater. And there is Scott playing Willem. And there's Scott playing the angry hockey guy. Scott yelling at Scott, the only special effect in Clerks. I always like these shots right here.
He looks cute there.
In the first draft, the hockey game was in the street.
Yeah, first draft, this hockey game was in the street. And when Vincent read it, we were actually walking out of the store one night. He was like, you should play it on the roof. And we looked up and we couldn't really see the roof, but we were like, wow, sounds like a good idea. So wrote it on the roof instead, and then when I actually saw the roof, I wished that I'd kept it in the street, because the roof was so damn small. But it wound up being one of the most memorable scenes from Clerks. Yeah, listen to Jay. We did it a few times, and he had a different line each time. What'd you think of that? That Dingleberry your favorite?
Maybe.
Perhaps it'd be better if you passed out again. And stayed passed out for the remainder of the movie. Watch, here we got the whole Warner Brothers music thing popping in again. For the first time. With that duck, man. Could anything be funnier than that duck?
We did lose that ball.
Yeah, and the ball did actually get lost. And that whole hockey game thing we repeated for the video. The music video, the solo sound video, can't even tell. Which, if all goes well, is on this Laserdisc. So you can see a repeat of that. The closest thing we'll ever come to a Clerk sequel. And in color. Al Berkowitz here.
Here's a weird cut.
Yeah, this is pretty weird. And they lean into it at the back of the front. I just thought that'd be cool. Al Berkowitz played the old man. He did a great job. Played it really ethnic, though, which is kind of weird. And you'll notice here, when the first cut of this film, he goes up and back to the counter about four times in the first cut. But now, in this one, I think he only does it. This is the first time. Then he does it two more times. And we used, which is probably the worst cutaway in the entire movie, to bridge, to get rid of that third time he came up to the counter, to just go one, two, right to four. And I'll show you that coming up. It's really bad. It's the one thing we hate watching whenever we watch the movie. Because we did this all in one long take, which is pretty nice. And at the end of this take, when Al, as the old man, walks out for the final time, he went off camera, stood next to Walter in the medicine aisle, and started talking and laughing. And we all, like, whipped our heads to look at him because we couldn't believe it. Thank God the mic didn't pick it up. Boy, chick. Sticking to the steadfast rule that comedy is repetition. Repetition is comedy. He just keeps coming up. But three times was the charm, four times was not. Hence we cut out that third time. So here comes that bad cut cover I was talking about. The worst cutaway in film history. That was actually from the hockey scene. It was a cut we used. We didn't have any coverage when we chopped minutes out of the film, so we went to a scene that was actually supposed to be in the hockey scene, where at one point the game stopped and Ed dropped the money off the roof. Jason collected it and then threw up a bag of weed, but it was out of place. Ed motherfucker muse, as they say. And we wound up using it as coverage for this. Doesn't make any sense whatsoever, but I wish we had a cat cutaway, which we probably did, but we were just too damn lazy to go find it amidst all the cutaway ruins. And then here comes the people found this cutaway the coming up really jarring, but I liked it. It was something I kind of got from a John Hughes movie.
And the only reason this cutaway is there is because this scene was the start of a role, and the opening of this scene there was a bad burnout, and this was like the only good take.
Film historian Vin Pereira weighing in with that little known fact. I forgot that's true. And for the record, Jeff hated beef jerky. But he had to eat about, what, 7 or 8 of them? Because we went about 8 takes on this. There's Scott offering me a sandwich. It's about the only shot that we're in.
And getting rejected.
And then getting rejected, trying not to laugh as he takes the sandwich back. The only shot I think that we're in the entire movie together. Except for, yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, that's it.
No, no, well, you come in the beginning. Yeah. But in Mallrats, we don't appear together at all. Yeah, there's Willem Black returns. Willem Black, the character Scott plays in Clerks, returns in Mallrats with a whole different look. But you're going to have to pay to see that. But Scott does return as a different character. Now, this was great. And we actually, the first time we were, I was working next door in the convenience store. Scott was cutting the movie in the video store. Remember you actually cut this scene?
Yep.
You're trying to do coverage style, the dork. So we had to wind up, go back, and cut it back together as the one long
you
take that it
me,
is.
You asked me, because there was 2 takes, and you wanted the beginning of one half and the last half of the other.
Yeah, because what happens is in this take that we wound up using in the movie, Jeff flubs his lines, but it works for the scene, because it seems like he's crying. I'll point it out when it happens.
We're actually driving.
Yeah, he's actually driving. That's not a stunt driver.
Yeah, I got my glasses on. I'm driving.
No camera car there. And I'm in the back holding the mic or the boom,
right.
And Dave's holding the camera, swinging back and forth.
There wasn't enough room, so I had to stay behind and work at the store.
Guys, I think this is moderately illegal to do this.
A little bit. We wound up getting McDonald's after it was all over. Here it comes. Listen. That little pause there, that's Jeff messing up, but it makes it seem like he's actually getting teary in the scene.
Oddly enough, should be pointed out that they're actually driving towards the store, not away from it.
Yeah, that's if you lived near there.
Yeah. If you live in Leonardo, you'd know that's true. That's why all the Leonardites wouldn't turn out for this movie, because they just utterly didn't agree with the logistics. The reverse logistics. And hear that? That's Golden Smog, fronted by Dave Perner, singing Shooting Star. Where it is, where it's sourced out of, I don't know, but the music stops when they step outside. You hear a little mic noise here. A little boom noise in there. It's because I wasn't holding the boom very straight.
That was one of the coldest days that we've ever shot. I was freezing.
Yeah, there was some bad wind. And also, we never asked for permission to shoot at this funeral parlor. We just showed up that morning. There's Dave in the middle. DP Dave popping up again. And in the lower right-hand corner, Mrs. Topper owns a store. It's her only appearance in Clerks. So, yeah, if you look real closely in that upstairs window, you might see some guy looking out because he lives above the funeral parlor, and we never asked to use this thing. And we showed up, some guy with a camera, some guy with this Niagara, and 2 guys walking up to the door and then go running out. We did that twice and then left.
Yeah. Did a little Starsky and Hutch roll over the car there.
Look at that. That is not a stunt, man.
That's more of a Dukes of a Hazzard and shit.
Here comes that
again.
And here comes that. Here comes, from the back, you see Scott, a woman, and Dave, our DP, whipping a rock. But that woman in the middle is none other than Ed. Ed in drag.
It should also be pointed out that the first draft of the script, there was a long funeral home scene.
Yeah, which actually had to get cut down severely.
Well, this is lost.
And lost. Suddenly we go from day to night in the movie, but nobody ever called us on that. Probably the harshest moment in Clerks when Jeff says, "Shut the fuck up, junkie," and the fart that's almost inaudible. Jay runs over to him, farts on him, but he can't really hear it. And if you didn't see, there was a shadow coming in from the left. That was me pulling in Scott, but we cut that part of the scene. Silent Bob was pulling in Willem Black, who was supposedly masturbating. Not on camera, but off in the woods, but we cut it out.
The only dolly shot here?
This isn't a dolly. We did this 9 times on a dolly and 1 time handheld, and we wound up using the 1 handheld. Walter, another appearance.
Favorite.
The hooded Walter showing up again, the Lon Chaney of the 90s, this time without any makeup whatsoever.
I'm sitting outside that door waiting for the cat to run out because he's trying to bolt from
the Yeah, that was the night we actually lost the cat in the woods. Held up production for a good hour and a half, 2 hours. You like that part, Che?
I love it.
Why? What's funny about it?
Walter's funny.
This is the other guy that runs the First Avenue Playhouse where we had auditions, Gary, whose lady would not be the role that Walter played, the offended customer. That's why Gary Stern. So Walter had to don the glasses and Brian's coat to become the offended customer. Because this guy's girlfriend wouldn't do it. She thought the screenplay was too puerile. Where she got that idea, I have no idea. Yeah, right before we started filming, the convenience store finally got a lottery machine. So if you look on the door, there's a lottery banner, but yet no lottery machine in evidence because I didn't write it into the script and I didn't want to bother. Plus, we needed all that room on the counter so you could see the guys. Yeah, the one I think with hands down the worst line in the script is Koala Fish Mutant Bird. I don't know what I was thinking. One of the only inside jokes in the script, though, is Space Alien revealed his head as Time Warner, which always got a laugh at film festivals. The great water spitting scene. Listen to the very haunting and eerie delivery of this line. This one here. Sounds like Boris Karloff. I'll never come in here again. The slight nod.
I never knew he did that.
What? I'll never.
I saw the film.
Oh, where he flips him?
Yeah,
like,
never knew that.
Gives him the salute.
Bri was unaware.
Notice that cooler is open.
What?
The cooler's open there. Did you notice that, guys?
Oh, my God.
Smoochie Poochies.
He may have 16 buds in him, but at least he can still point out those little things. Okay, here's the man who would be Dante. Ernie O'Donnell wound up playing the trainer in a pretty great little performance here. He's got some really great one-liners. But through conflicting ideas of how the character should be portrayed, Ernie's on the other side of the counter instead of where Brian's standing as Dante. And let's point out that Randall leaves the store. Randall left. And as Vinny pointed out, in the first draft of the screenplay, Randall left to go hang out with his girlfriend, go pick her up. And there was a sex scene, I believe, but I cut it out. But since he never mentions really mentions girls, it's kind of nebulous as to what his whole sexual preference is. And a lot of people hypothesize that Randall was a big closeted homosexual.
Kind of like Jughead.
Jughead for Archie. That sweet young thing right there, that's Kim Lochran, the girl who I dated all through high school and most of her college career, and she's the kind of the impetus for the two characters. She's the one that inspired them, the two female characters, Caitlin and Veronica.
Ken Clark
as the administer of the fine. This is the only scene where we really get into like coverage. Goes to two shots to one shots. Which is nice practice for the working on Mallrats.
Yeah. Starring Jason Mewes.
Also, there's a line coming up at the end of this scene where she says, sure, how about the beach? It doesn't kind of make sense anymore because while you were cutting the film, you accidentally left a little story out of this.
Yeah, there was one or two lines that explain that this guy Rick Darris liked to take chicks to the beach or make love on a beach. So it doesn't really make sense when she's like, sure, how about the beach? But, well, if you read the script, it would make sense. Get the hell off my blanket, you drunk. What does one say during a scene like this?
I remember something pretty funny about that.
What's that? Then with a historical tale.
Yeah, well,
I know you had several takes of him saying you used to fuck Caitlin Bree, and one of them was you used to have sex with Caitlin Bree, and you used to fuck Caitlin Bree. And I remember there was a bit of a back and forth as to whether you should use fuck or sex. Ultimately, you went with the harsher of the two.
Hence the NC-17 later on, which we battled, reversed to Gendar, and did not have to cut a single frame. Little sound gaff there, you hear an S left over from something else.
Also a continuity error at 4 o'clock.
Yeah. Yeah, the time doesn't really make sense. There's two things, the time issue here, because 4 o'clock, I mean, it would have been 6 by the time. It would have been earlier when he sold the cigarettes to the girl, because they were playing hockey around 4 or something. And it comes up later on with the... when the old guy's found in the bathroom.
It's not a real law, is it?
Yes, this is absolutely a law. This comes from...
in the court of law?
Oh, I don't know. You probably could. You could, as you're very fond of pointing out, Walter, you could contest anything in a court of law. But, yeah, that's actually a real statute. I had to call up and get the specs on that statute. Yeah. I remember in high school, I thought these two had had an affair once.
I'll fucking kill him.
Yeah, right? You defend me, right?
Fuck yeah.
Caitlin wanted to dial, it was ADR.
Yeah, Caitlin wasn't really here. That's the magic of cinema. We just picked up that line. This isn't a video store that no longer exists. Video, Choice Video, which in the movie was called Big Choice Video. Choice Video is closed now.
That really great video store in Middletown?
Yeah, they closed down. Listen to you, what are you, a friggin' commercial for the place? That really great video store in Middletown?
That's why they closed down.
There was an extended scene as well. That.
Yeah, there was actually a scene that I kind of wrote right before we went into it, but we couldn't do it because the equipment broke down that night. It was going to be Vinny's big line scene.
That's move, Silent Boob.
Yep, and there's Silent Boob.
And up comes Vinny.
There's the appearance of Lisa.
First appearance of Lisa Spoonhour as Caitlin in her tour de force 10 minutes.
And my man, Silent Bob.
Silent Bob up. There's Reggie, son of the owner of the store. And there's Vinny. Look at those. How far can you roll those sleeves up? Vincent with a haircut. I mean, Vincent with a clean cut haircut. Now Vinny's shaved like a skinhead. And here's the very big, often remembered dancing scene.
Just a little point. If you notice, when Silent Bob went into the store, he bought a thing of sugar.
Yeah.
Either they're cutting their dope down, or he just needs a really big sugar high.
No, what it was something I cut later on. Was after the ambulance pulls away in a scene you'll see later on, we cut back to Jason eating a box of sugar.
Also, that scene had a slightly different opening,
mm-hmm.
where Jay goes, "Damn, it's fucking slow."
Yeah. And then
the ever so famous 7.
No, the music that was playing, I think we listened to the beginning of a House of Pain song, and then we shut it off just for him to get it. And just to let you know what a big spaz he is, we had to clear the friggin' set the night he was dancing. It's kind of hard to clear a set because we're outside, and it's night, right? So, you know, we're about to shoot this dancing thing, and Jay's like, "I don't want to do it, man. I don't want to dance in front of everybody." So everyone had to go hide in the friggin' video store so this child could pull his moves. He was such a prima donna, but in the end it worked. Now in Mallrats, as we shoot Mallrats there, there's another dancing sequence, but he couldn't get away with that. Everybody's got to turn around crap, because there's too many people on the set, so he had to dance in front of everybody. So this right here, yeah, this is the second scene shot. So if you'll look at Brian's beard, it's kind of thin there as compared to like most of the other places in the film where his beard is really thick. This is the second thing we shot. We did this all in one take, 7 minutes. Close to 7 minutes. But yeah, one take.
That would have been my first scene.
Oh yeah. Well, no, not this. It's the other scene.
No, it's the other scene. We'll get to later. But look at, I mean, the performance level on the scene is incredible. There's not a flub. We never cut. And they go back and forth. So Lisa here, ironically enough, wound up getting engaged to Jeff, who plays Randall. And by the time this disc comes out, no, they won't be married yet, but they're on their way to the altar.
Oh, yeah, they postponed it.
They postponed the wedding. Yeah, but they met and fell in love on the set of Clerks. Now, who will meet and fall in love on the set of Mallrats, Jay?
Me and Moves.
Love what I'm saying.
Yeah, Moves is me. Just for the sake, for the benefit of those out there who might not know that. Yeah, I mean, what can be said? It's just a great, it's a great performance. It's one of the, it's the one moment in the scene I'm probably in craft I'm most proud of, because these guys are just fantastic.
Malcolm, you have any questions?
The journalist caught unawares. It's the good load.
We got 4 minutes.
And the what?
This was the first thing they ever shot?
This is the second thing we ever shot.
What was the first thing?
First thing was that take with you that we had to cut, which we'll point out later on.
So this was sort of like, this scene was so excellent, it was a premonition, and then everything else was just going to go so excellent.
Yeah, an omen, as Walter, as the very superstitious Walter pointed out. But we thought because we got this in one take that we'd get everything in one take, and we were soon to find out that that was wrong. But this is the first night of shooting, and we had about 12 to 15 people crammed in the video store watching this.
And huge crew that night.
Huge crew. 21 shooting days. 27,575.
How'd you raise that finance?
Well, I raised it from credit cards, and there was some. I sold a comic book collection for some credit that I sold off to friends to get cash. There was a big storm that took away two of my cars that I shared with this little dog over here.
Jason News.
Do you remember the night you told me, like, Moves, let me take the car. I'm going to park it up top of the hill. It's supposed to flood. And I was like, no.
Yeah.
And then a flood came and flooded the car out. And then I was kind of left looking like a dork. Well, it was bad at first, but then it was good because I got fat money from the government for those trash cars. From the FEMA grant, which went into the budget. So
yeah,
it was fucking...
Right,
it was good!
Time, right?
Yeah, you were right. That was the one time Jason's ever been right.
More than you.
Way more than me.
Wait, you wanted to leave the car where it was.
I wanted to leave the car in my driveway where it was, and he wanted to take it out. I was right in the end because I got money, but he was right because it got flooded.
Yeah. Do you decide what the people were going to wear?
I don't know. It was kind of like a wardrobe choice. It was like, well, that looks good. Keep that. Which attests to the fact that Marilyn wears that white belly blouse because I have no sense of fashion whatsoever.
Razor fans might be horrified to know that Kevin's collection was almost destroyed in said storm.
Yeah, and that storm that took away the two cars that helped finance this film, I almost lost my entire Laserdisc collection. Kev didn't build that house. But thankfully, the Laserdiscs were spared. Although, the slip covers, some of them got water damaged. But there's a happy ending because the movie got made.
Oh, how'd you find Lisa? You never discussed that.
Yeah, Lisa I found at Brookdale Community College. We were still looking for Caitlin, so I stopped in at Brookdale, which is a local community college, sat in on an acting class and just watched one class, and she was in the class and she was really good, so I came up to her afterwards. I said, do you want to be in a movie? And I produced the VSQ company card, which has a clown, you know, the clown from the opening animation on it. And it says, and the card says, oh, here's us dancing again. And the card says, we'll put anything in our mouths. Just kidding, we make films. And here we go. Yeah. Dancing Bob, Dancing Jay.
Little Jackie Gleason looking there, huh?
Have you been asked to imitate that dance?
Many, many times, and I've never done it.
Huh. During this little part here with the video store, where he comes back from the video store, I had a massive head cold these few days that we were shooting Sue. I'm just like trying to hold my nose from running down my entire face.
Hear the stray cat meowing.
Yeah, if you listen real closely, you hear a cat meowing. Also, you notice the summons is a different piece of paper than what was originally handed to Dante. And you'll notice that Dante tucks his pants into his Doc Martens there.
You got it.
Yeah, I never noticed that. Looks like a goose stepper.
Yeah, didn't you see it from the beginning where the boots scene?
That's right. Dialogue's really fast in this scene too, which I really, really like. Look at that tape very closely. It says "Best of Both Worlds."
Whatever methodical dictates behavior.
Well, this is my way of spitting water at life.
Yeah, there's ants all over.
Would you let the cast and crew eat the food in the store?
Sure, absolutely, but we kept a running tally, and we had to pay for it. Now, in this very dark, shadowy scene, you see Jay. This was much longer, too, and we cut it down. There's me, and there's Jay, and there's some locals, including Tara, Ed's lady love.
Aww.
Berserker.
And you can hear Berserker being played in the background, a recording of by Love Amongst Freaks of that song.
And
if you look really closely, science is I eat cock.
Which did not register at all in the first print.
Yeah, in the first print it was so washed out I couldn't see it. Hear this porno soundtrack? That's us. We made the porno soundtrack. One day if you get a chance and you're not listening to their dialogue, just listen to the porno soundtrack underneath. It's actually pretty funny.
It's you and David, right?
It's me and Dave. Me and DP Dave making up a sick porno soundtrack, and then later on when we were mixing the film before it got released, other people wound up on it as well.
Yeah.
See, once again, Lisa's outfit, total testament to the fact that I know nothing about fashion. DP Dave has finally arrived. Ladies and gentlemen, DP Dave. Say hi, Dave.
Hi, ladies.
We've been talking about you, we've been talking about your handiwork, but you haven't been here to comment, so think of some stuff to say.
Clean shaven.
I need some light.
Yeah, as Dave would say, I need a light.
A halogen light.
A halogen light.
And some HIMs.
So this is ironic, because these two people here are now engaged, and if you look really closely, he's eating Apple Jacks, drinking Yoo-Hoo, and there's some DC Comics on the counter in front of him.
And as Lisa walks away, he cups a look at her ass.
He does.
It's just a little omen for the future.
And watch, there's one point where, in the next scene, Brian's going to walk in, and you're going to hear what sounds like a drum roll, but it's not that. I'll point it out. When he throws his
yeah, when
your
I
coat,
my jacket, it, yeah, into a bunch
it makes of it makes like makes a cymbal kind of noise. He'll point it out, and that was totally unintentional.
I used three.
Here we go. Takes a look at a butt. But again, Randall, not very interested in chicks. Goes back to watching TV.
Muses sign.
Here, listen. Here comes the sound. Sounds like a drum roll, man, but it's not.
I think you hit like a waste basket or something.
This was my favorite line in rehearsals. Poo poo wee wee, fuck you. Made me laugh time and time again.
This shot was cut a bit. Focus on it for Dave.
Yeah, let's talk about the old composition here and pass the mic over to DP Dave.
DP Dave's in the house. This composition here was really tough. It was very different from what we've done before in the rest of the movie because, we're at the counter. it differs from the, the anti-smoker crusade or the, anything else that plays at the counter. It's just very different. See, it's handheld, as you can tell.
Why don't you talk about,
Yeah, we did. We had a big fluorescent bank right up above these three.
Were they halogen lights?
No, they're fluorescent. Stupid. We had another one behind the counter.
Yeah, why'd you have all those fluorescent lights?
To bring up the ambient for our exposure.
Basically.
Talk about some professional stuff so the people that paid a lot of money for the disc feel like they're getting their money's worth.
No.
Instead of hearing us just go like, cheers,
well,
What'd you shoot at that?
Well, for all the people that pay a lot of money for this disc, you kind of got fucked. Are you sure there was someone back there? Where did we shoot it at? Boy. 5'6", around a 4 and a 5'6".
You should talk over this because it's around a
5'6". Back to camp.
Technical mumbo jumbo. Back to the real reporting. Look, you can kind of see his eyes move. He's not really dead. Okay, look at that. See that hard-on under the blanket there? the sheet. Well, that's a plunger or a piece of a broom handle that we propped up.
We made that with a Hershey syrup bottle with a tissue taped over the top of it to give it like a bulbous tip.
Yeah, a bulbous tip. That was the effect we were going for.
It's really my finger.
Yeah. And it's funny because this is a lot of people ask us. There's the porno mag, and there's Ken Clark again playing the ambulance attendant, the minister of fines. That's his wife, who plays the coroner. She's writing pretty fast on that clapboard, isn't she? Clipboard.
Now,
here's old Willem, who makes his final appearance in the film. A lot of people, a lot of women said that that was a really disturbing image of Lisa sitting in the back of the ambulance with a sheet wrapped around her, kind of shivering. But I thought it was funny.
Especially since what thinking organism would place her in the ambulance with the corpse? Also,
in the wacky yeah. world of Clerks, that's what happens.
Watching this film in the theater is pretty fun because
she's going to need people counseling already. Throw her in
yeah.
the ambulance.
Yeah, and there goes Willem. Willem comes into the ambulance unnoticed. And sits down. That cut went on longer to where he took off his hat and put it on the guy's hard on, and then started eating the bagel. But it didn't make it into the final cut.
But you'll see the hat is now.
But you'll see the hat. There's the hat covering, and he's eating a bagel.
My man.
There was originally a shot of Jason eating sugar off.
Yeah, this was the point where the sugar came into play. Once the ambulance left, Dave was eating sugar.
How did you go about getting an ambulance?
I have simply asked somebody that I knew on the Leonardo.
That was Jason.
Ambulance. What do they call that?
Squad.
Salsa Shark. Big tribute to Jaws here. Yeah, if you'll notice, the brand name of the salsa is covered by a piece of camera tape. Dave, adding in more of that technical mumbo jumbo. Camera tape. For those of you that don't know what it is, it's tape that you use on the camera. It's pretty pricey.
It feels pretty good lying on a cold cooler as well. It's good for the back.
So you notice you don't really see the brand of the chip. It's obscured in every shot. Although, behind them, you see many brands of brand name food, so I don't know why we felt the need to obscure Doritos when you could see Fiddle Faddle, Orville Redenbacher, Crunch and Munch, Hershey's. I don't know what we were thinking.
Oh, you never discussed a pack of cigarettes?
Yeah, if you'll notice, people keep coming into the store, and they ask, are you open? Which is funny, because there's a big banner that says they are open. And everyone asked for a pack of cigarettes. No one asked for brand names. We did that because there's that whole non-smoking diatribe in the beginning where they refer to it as the Nazis of the 90s, the manufacturer of cigarettes. So just to stay away from any possible lawsuits, we just figured, hey, it's best not to even mention it, not to mention brand names. Plus, it's just funny that it's in the Clerks universe, people just come in and ask for cigarettes, and they get them.
Because they're such usuals that you know what kind of cigarettes they want.
Oh, my God, Jay, shaking off that hangover and coming up with a comment.
Snicky boogies.
Life of Convenience, wasn't that the original title?
Life of Convenience was one of the titles. Also, Inconvenience. But Clerks came from a list that Vinny gave me. Vinny said, why don't you call it Rude Clerks? And I said, nah, but Clerks, now there's a name. Hence, Clerks. See this cutaway we needed because we couldn't make it through with a whole take of that thing. That was another thing we kept messing up. And that person that asked for, you know, are you open? That was me. Are you open?
So what do you think about Fiddle Faddle?
Fiddle Faddle's good.
Crunchy
Munch. Crunchy Munch is better.
I call him my dad always. You never hear because people are laughing. My mother's been fucking it.
How would your father react to that line?
My father liked the movie fine, but he never mentioned that line. But he's a big Navy SEALs kind of guy, so we went our separate ways right there. As soon as that Navy SEALs joke popped up, you know, he felt like I had crossed him.
Yeah. You should mention where Navy SEALs came from, since it truly was the most requested film.
Navy SEALs was the hottest renting video in RST Video's history. People love that movie to death. You'll notice both the stores actually are operating under their real names, Quick Stop and RST. We never bothered to change them.
So call them many times.
Yeah, they're still there in Leonardo, too. go down there. I'm not there, but, you know, store is.
But the sign above the video store, new release shelf still is there.
Yeah, the sign.
Same phone number.
And here we go. The final moment in the film for both Jay and Silent Bob.
What do you think about that cardigan sweater?
It's pretty sweet. Jay's rallying cry of noinch, noinch, noinch. Now watch the continuity errors here. Sometimes the hat's back, sometimes it's more forward, sometimes the shirt's on his shoulder, sometimes it's not. This scene actually went on much longer, a minute longer, but we had to cut it. Because it just didn't make much sense. He just rambled and rambled. We had a half hour worth of footage on this scene, which had to be cut into, what, two and a half, 3 minutes?
Because
Jay was totally stoned that night. Was this the night that he was asleep on the phone?
Yeah, and the person called.
Might have been the stoned and drunk
night. Yeah.
That might have been the problem.
He was utterly gone. And Scott went to get him to shoot it. And watch this. This is a fun moment we all thought was funny. But nobody in the audience ever thought that was funny. So Scott went to get Jay. And Jay was dead asleep on the floor. And the phone was next to his ear, and somebody was talking on the other end going, Jay? Jay? And so we had to wake him up to do this scene. We'll come bring you food. Watch this. 80-yard line. You'll notice that's not in sync at all. That line that he just did. She does a lot for you. It was borrowed from another take. And he didn't really fuck up. That was scripted.
But it looks like it.
But it looks like it did. Now here comes Jay going off. Totally unscripted. Silent Bob's only speaking line. Now you'll hear Jay in the background summon me. And every take it was different. Come on, Tubby. Come on, Limp Dick. Come on, two tons of fun. So I went with Limp Dick.
This scene was cut.
Now this scene, you'll notice the makeup in this scene, Jeff looks like a raccoon or a female impersonator. This is the very, very first scene that we ever shot. And the makeup girl went a little off on him. So he's got a lot of eyeliner there.
I guess it kind of plays into that whole...
You see camera Randall flares, too.
Is Randall gay thing?
Yeah, actually, when Randall left the store, he went in to do a female impersonator cabaret and then came back. Now, that scene was cut severely because Walter used to come into the store after she left and hold up the tape and go, ooh, Navy SEALs. But it just went on, so we lost Walter's last appearance as himself. The only time he appears in his own leather jacket as himself.
This was many takes.
Yeah, this shot took a lot of takes to get. Because, I mean, you know, it's a pretty big speech that Marilyn's got to spit out.
And at the speed, too.
But look at that camera work, man. Who was working the camera that day?
I don't know. Let's find out.
Let's talk to DP Dave.
Here, Dave.
Well, this scene is very different from the rest of the film because we're looking away from the counter.
Okay. Enough of that technical mumbo.
Looking away from the camera, from the counter, and nice shot of Marilyn covered by hair.
That black looks really good.
One of the different stages of Brian's goatee, too. I think that's thin, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because we shot her in the first 3 days of the week.
Fuck you, that's a great one.
Back to moves, Kevin Smith.
I always love this shot, man. Very subtle light. Very subtle light. All dark in the back. It's all calm. Moment before the storm.
Kevin was actually asleep when we shot this fight scene.
Not the whole thing. I fell asleep during some of the shooting this fight scene. Yeah. I was really tired. Look, see, Brandon Lee undercover people as opposed to Sol El Moonfry.
Who's this?
And this is Corrosion of Conformity, man, with a really killer little COC.
Yeah, a fucking A!
So this scene went on and on, too. We actually cut this down. The fight went on to ridiculous lengths.
And there came the cat.
And that mess, making that mess was fun. And at film festivals, people asked, did you pay for that food? And I was always like, yeah, next question.
Actually, we were able to salvage a good portion of it.
Yeah, and we gave it to Jay.
Fucking A.
Who was drunk, who was like, this is good, Moose. Is this food fresh? And then passed out. Yeah, this scene was, again, one of the hardest scenes of film because Jeff has to spit out a very big speech, and we couldn't do it. Well, we could do it. Jeff couldn't get it all out. So sometimes you'll hear when he throws things across, it actually hits a board at one point, right?
We had
written
written
the lines on a board and first cue cards. But first and only cue cards.
And when you see him leave the scene angrily,
he really is pissed. Because after, you know, he would storm out of the shot and go and punch the wall. He was so mad. Which really worked for the scene. And again, we're doing a really good job of hiding up all the brand names of those candies.
Snickers.
Milky Way.
Common press shots up
with. Yeah, I mean, every time they print something from the film, it's this. I always thought this or the shot of them on the cooler should have been the poster shot.
But as drunk as Muse is, never needed a cue card.
Yeah.
Or Stone, never needed a cue card.
Well, for the record. Yeah. Actually, we held the script right off camera, and you would look at it over the counter, right beyond the camera. So it's just as good as a cue card.
Oh, fuck you.
We'd feed them to you one by one. Jay, now say this. I saw jack up your car once.
Fuck you.
See, we wanted to get this all in one take, too. We had to break it into coverage. Which actually works nicer. There's a little flub there, but it works for the scene.
Kevin's best friend. You know, that guy Jay's got it right, man. He has no delusions about what he does. Fucking Jay, man. Got it right.
Oh, we had a film. We're so advanced. We're so fucking advanced. What are we doing working here? Very, very angry.
Really angry. Exit.
Try to steal a piece of candy at that time.
Danny Ma kind of ends the whole film. Oh, yeah. Well, here we are, the last inner title. Actually, I use those words. It was going to be chapter headings of, like, first, second, third circle of hell, kind of after Dante's Inferno. But instead, since we didn't know what the fate of the film would be, I figured I'd insure the film a nice space on the college film market, you know, college repertory house market, by putting in big, fat vocabulary words. So it works. But everyone, this is the only part of the film that's kind of pretentious.
The only thing about those big words, though, is when we'd go to film festivals or people who would meet me, Brian, they would say, oh, Dante. They thought it was the credits, and thus I was going by a one-name actor basis.
Here comes the innuendo from Jeff. Listen. Want me to do anything for you before I get out of here? Like a little, you know. Once again, leading into the whole, is Randall gay?
This gave one problem.
We had to listen to this 80-yard loop.
Sucked.
Sound okay. He sings, here comes Randall, he's a berserker. But really it was, here comes Wrangler, and he's one tough customer. It was the Wrangler song.
Dave Perner fucking rolls!
Yeah, solo sound kicks in, ending the movie with a big bang. But as you'll see in the edited out footage that follows the movie, the movie actually went on a little longer. Let's look at the credits, though. Look at that. Walt, and Walt Flanagan four times in a row.
Is there another Bendick in this movie?
Yeah. Muse.
Fuck you.
There's Vinny. The whole Pereira family, as a matter of fact.
Muse fucking rules. Fucking A. Milky Booches.
The dog, Haiku. The cat, Lennon's Tomb. Who will? Benji, man, who helped us put together a really killer soundtrack. Which, you know, when we made the film, I never thought about music once. And we wound up coming off with some really nice songs.
Great video.
Really great video. Which should follow this movie. But if you look closely, after Berserker, the song Big Problems, it's really Big Problems. Well, actually, that won't be like that. Well, I'd imagine they fix it. It's Troy McClellan, here's our boy. Boom, whoever grabbed the pole. Oh, he's got a big laugh.
John Pearson.
John Pearson, man. There's a few people we should mention as a credits role, of course. John Pearson, indie guru, helped get us to where we are today. Sold our film to Miramax. Bob Hawk, who discovered it, the IFFM.
Bobby.
Bobby Hawk. Two names are the most important names in the independent film industry. If anyone out there thinking about making an independent film, Bob Hawk, John Pearson. And our legal aid, John Sloss, lawyer extraordinaire. And then we got the special thanks section.
What was the invitation to lunch?
The invitation to lunch mentioned the credits at film school. I asked Scott if he wanted to grab some lunch. We went to Denny's. And then we became friends, and then we made a movie together.
Maybe you should did. Finally,
Uncle Al's my uncle that died while we were making the movie. He was an actor. Jay and Silent Bob will return in Dogma, but first they'll return in what?
Mallrats, fucking A.